It's time for Let's Talk Legal with Cecil Harvell and Wes Collins from the law firm of Harvell and Collins. If you have a legal question, they can give you the answer. Call now at 252-222-4848.
And we'd like to welcome Cecil Harvell and Wes Collins, both of whom are on the line in remote areas or in their office. I'm here in the studio. Gentlemen, I know I've been away for a couple of days, but I have shaved and showered. I'm presentable, but I understand your lack of coming to the office today. So that's fine in the studio, but you're busy people. So good morning. Good morning, Wes. Good morning, Cecil.
Good morning. How are you,
hey,
Mike?
Terrific. Great to be back in the saddle. What are we going to talk about today? Let's talk legal, gentlemen.
Mike, our office does a significant amount of planning for folks who have questions concerning the living conditions, the care support of their elder loved one. And there's a lot of terminology in that area that we'd kind of like to unpack today and talk a little bit about.
Good.
And basically, a lot of us, as we get older, we continue to live, you know, in our own independent living circumstance. This,
sure,
of course, is what folks enjoy. They enjoy, you know, living at home, being at home. And that is, of course, kind of where everything kind of begins.
Mm-hmm.
The next step of care for some folks is that they then want to have some sort of assisted living. We want to talk about that. And the last, of course, source of our type of care would be skilled care, where we are needing really a great deal of daily maintenance in order to be comfortable. So let's kind of talk about those things. We also have to begin to introduce the subject, which is the cousin to those terms, about Medicare versus Medicaid.
Mm-hmm.
And this is something that is confused and talked about a lot of times, and questions evolve. We all, Mike, I think a lot of our listeners know, but all of us, of course, will eventually be on Medicare. Medicare seems to work pretty well, and as one gets into 65, one is always going to become a member of and eligible for and on the plan relative to the Medicare program. The bottom line, though, is that Medicare does not pay for assisted living and or skilled nursing care living except for very limited circumstances. Medicaid, on the other hand, does pay for again, under certain circumstances, assisted living and or skilled care, but there are, the square pegs have to be in the square holes in order for our loved ones to qualify for Medicaid. So this is the sea in which we're going to swim in this morning. Okay, Mike? That's
okay.
The introduction.
Very good. Good introduction, Cecil. A little choppy waters there, too, and just getting some definitions out of the way are important as well. So good morning, Wes. I know you want to add to this.
Hey, good morning. You know, this issue is interesting. Really, we kind of back into it quite often because folks are very concerned about, primarily when you're dealing with an attorney, they're concerned about the cost,
mm-hmm,
of the long-term care. They're concerned about, you know, what if mom or dad or grandma or grandpa, aunt or uncle, whoever it may be, has to go into a facility of some sort. There are questions about at-home care and what that costs, and ultimately arriving at the most expensive level of care, which would be the skilled nursing facility level of care. So really, as I say, we're backing into these things. That really ultimately is the primary question now, being the expense. But as part of that, of course, we have to have an understanding as to what level of care is needed from a medical perspective for the individual. And really, that is a medical determination. It's not really a legal determination. That's something that either, you know, the caring physician or a physician that the patient goes to see makes a determination of. Sometimes the doctor at the hospital, if the person is in the hospital because of an acute situation, like maybe a stroke or something like that, and we arrive at a document called FL2. FL2 is really a document that the medical provider completes relative to an examination of the patient so as to determine and to report officially the level of care that is needed by the individual. And that's very important because when we're talking about benefits that may be available and that are available in certain circumstances to cover the incredibly high cost of care, we're talking about assisted living is one thing. There's very limited eligibility for Medicaid benefits. Then when we get to skilled nursing facility, the eligibility for Medicaid benefits are much more significant. You know, when we're talking about skilled nursing facility care being floating around the $7,000, $8,000 per month price tag and assisted living facility cost of care not being too far behind that, then, you know, the eligibility for benefits to help cover those costs are, that's pretty important. Most people cannot, can't afford that.
You're right.
Right. So we have to back into this issue of, from a medical perspective, what level of care is needed.
That's right. So, Mike, let's kind of continue along this line as Wes is mentioning of where the pieces kind of will fit. Generally speaking, Medicaid will pay eventually if we can adjust the financial circumstances of the client. Medicaid will pay for skilled care. Medicaid is not going to pay for assisted living under any set of circumstances unless the client or patient meets a financial income criteria. Mm-hmm. And that criteria for assisted living, Mike, is generally about $1,200 of income for assisted living, and or $1,500 of income. These are round figures. If for some reason that client is needing memory care, mm-hmm. It's a bit higher. It jumps up from $1,200 to $1,500 if it is relative to memory care. See, the difference is that Medicaid for a skilled care facility is not based on the income. The facility, the nursing facility, will take the income, but you can have $2,500 of income, $3,000, $3,500, $4,000, $4,500 of income. You can have any amount of income. Medicaid will still pay for the skilled care up to the $7,000 if, of course, all of the other factors of asset qualification have been met. So we have to make a distinction between what are the assets of the client and what is the income of the client.
Sure.
The asset qualification is going to be applicable in assisted living files as well as long-term skilled nursing care files. However, the income equation is only going to apply in assisted living files. We have a lot of clients who have satisfied the asset qualification, and yet due to their Social Security and or other income being higher than the $1,200 threshold that I just mentioned, they simply are not able to qualify for assisted living under any circumstances at all. So there's a kind of a minefield out here, if you will,
yeah.
And we have to kind of go through these facts and circumstances with the clients and look at the finances and then apply the law as to each individual client.
I'm sitting here listening to your, how you unpack this topic, and I'm wondering, Cecil or Wes, At what point do you become involved with a family, and who is that family member that makes that initial approach to you about mom or dad or some loved one? It sounds like a very complicated, esoteric issue to people who haven't been exposed to it at first. You guys live in this and you work it all the time, but to just the regular, you know, Joe and Mary who's taking care of their old aunt or their mother or father, at what point in time do they come to you? Is it sometimes too late, or is there a time that it would be ideal to get this all mapped out and planned out and understood?
Well, what I would mention about that is I would say that over the years that has evolved from being more of a planning procedure that takes place when there is a somewhat imminent need.
Mm-hmm.
I would say that historically it has been more of a situation where if there's been a diagnosis of maybe vascular dementia or Alzheimer's or some type of progressive cognitive disease, then that oftentimes would lead to folks coming to see us or to seek planning relative to protecting assets. I would say that has evolved more into what I would call standard estate planning.
Sure.
You know, it's advisable for folks to have in order certain documents. And this has been, you know, for years, many, many years. Will, power of attorney, health care power of attorney, living will, these type of documents fall into the category of your standard estate planning. As we've talked about on the program, mm-hmm. under certain circumstances,
sure.
a trust would mm-hmm. fall into that category, those type things. Now, with the expense of long-term care being, you know, somewhere around $7,000 per month, it's oftentimes necessary and oftentimes something that the client wants to talk about, which is how do I structure my assets so that I'm sure that I don't lose my home.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure I don't lose my, you know, other assets that I may have or property I may have inherited from my parents. So certainly, Mike, we deal with folks who are in an imminent need. You know, maybe there is an accident of some sort, the person was injured, or there is a medical need such as a stroke or something along those lines. But I would say more often folks, even in their 50s, as part of their standard estate planning, are interested in making sure that they don't misstep and fail to plan in a way that they could plan for in order to use the law to their benefit to protect, you know, what they've saved and accumulated during their lifetime.
Yeah, that's a good point, Wes. And I know over the past 20 years or so that you've been doing this show, and for the last almost 2 years that I've been doing this show, the takeaways are, and you mentioned this right out of the gate here, living conditions of the elderly. They want to live in their home as long as possible, but they also don't want to give away that home to the nursing home if they were to move their primary residence to a nursing home. And you've discussed ways, a trust, to protect that under the law, that they can do that without losing assets. We'll talk more. We'll continue this conversation with Harvell and Collins after this quick timeout. You can reach them at 726-9050. Welcome back to Let's Talk Legal with Harvell and Collins. And with us on the phone, Cecil Harvell and Wes Collins. And again, the firm, you can reach them at 252-726-9050. We're talking about living conditions of the elderly and the choices they have as they get into their later years, living at home or an assisted living center or skilled care, and the costs and what all it takes to achieve that. A very, again, weighty subject. And doing a good job, gentlemen, of explaining some of just the basics of this for our listeners. We appreciate that.
I would say one of your earlier questions, Mike, is that, of course, usually the healthy spouse, if you will, mm-hmm. will come in the office very concerned about their failing in health spouse.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes they will bring their adult child with them. Other times it is just the adult child that's in the office that's very concerned about their elder and failing in health parent. But the bottom line is that these files are really like putting together a puzzle. I like to think of it that way.
Sure.
But the pieces of the puzzle, Mike, are fairly straightforward. You know, the facts are the facts. We can't change the income of a client. It is what it is. And if for some reason that family is wanting their loved one to have assisted living, if the income is over that $1,200 threshold, Medicaid just simply is not going to pay for it, and they're going to be required to pay for it, or what we call self-pay. Now, what happens in a file where folks have assisted living, and maybe they are self-pay for a while, if their loved one continues to deteriorate medically, then, of course, at some point they would move to skilled care or long-term care. And now, as I've mentioned before, it doesn't matter what their income happens to be. It can be, you know, $2,000 or $3,000 or $4,000, but we can get the facts or the pieces of the puzzle put together so that Medicaid will pay the difference if it is a long-term care nursing home situation. Wes mentioned earlier this FL2, that is an absolutely critical document that we're dealing with every day, and it makes perfect sense if we stop to think about it, that neither the family nor the lawyer nor even the Department of Social Service can medically qualify, if you will, or determine what the needs of the client patient happen to be. That is a medical decision.
Mm-hmm.
And so the FL2 is a document, a form, it's a form that describes and depicts the medical condition of the patient and what level of care they are currently needing. Are they needing independent living? Are they needing assisted living? Are they needing memory care facility? Or are they needing a skilled care facility? And those very terms that I just mentioned are on that form, and the physician marks which category that patient happens to fall into and what the needs are for that patient, and then the medical team signs that form. That then dictates to we, the lawyer, as well as to the Department of Social Services, what the level of care needs to be in the file, and then we fit the pieces of the puzzle from there.
I'm curious, too, when a family approaches you for the first time at Harvell and Collins, how many of them come in with a long-term care insurance policy? Is that something you commonly see or not?
It is there, and there are clients that have it. It's rare indeed, and it's wonderful when they do. I find, Mike, an irony in that. It's a great question. Folks who can afford a long-term care policy are the folks that can afford assisted living and or nursing care to begin with.
I see.
That's kind of the irony of it.
Mm-hmm.
Long-term care insurance, a long-term care policy, you know, that's an expensive insurance product. And yes, we see clients who have them, but sometimes those are the types of clients, or many times they are the types of clients who are really very financially independent anyway.
Yeah, okay, that's a good question. And one other term I wish you could just elaborate on for maybe 30 seconds or so. We hear the term look back as it relates to assets and nursing homes. What is that term look back, and if that's an official term?
Right, look back period used to be 3 years. It's now 5 years, and that 5 years would run from either hospitalization that ends up into the person being institutionalized. That's placed in a facility. It's kind of a strong word, but that's what it's called in the law.
Yeah.
And basically what it is, it's either from hospital or from actually the institutionalization. And it's a five-year look-back period to determine if you transferred any assets to someone like a child that's sanctionable, meaning if you just conveyed the property by deed to your kids. Well, that's a no-no. They'll pull that back in.
Yeah.
Okay, that's an example. If you gave money, if you transferred, you know, whatever assets it may be, but that look-back period is limited to that 60-month period of time.
Okay. Yeah, and again, that's the kind of a we dovetailed into, we discuss look-backs in another context as it relates to trusts with protecting the home front for the living of our elderly or older parents. So it's an important term to understand, just as Medicare and Medicaid are important terms to understand. And a lot of people probably don't understand the true definitions of that. We'll take a short break here, come back with our final segment. We're talking with Cecil Harvell and Wes Collins from Harvell and Collins. You can reach the firm today. Call 252-726-9050. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Let's Talk Legal with Harvell and Collins. This is a great topic, gentlemen. If you think of the demographics, the baby boomers, they're 75 years old, the oldest ones, and I'm in that group. I'm turning 60, so it's a big demographic that we're looking at. And
yeah.
A lot of people, like I said, don't understand the true definitions of these terms we talked about today. Gentlemen, in the 80 seconds we have left, go ahead.
Let me loop around a minute, Mike, just to that question about the five-year look-back period. It absolutely is exactly as Wes explained. And I want to say this. If anyone receives Medicaid benefits, either through assisted living because of the fact that their income is the $1,200 or less, or either through long-term care in a nursing home because they qualify medically for the nursing home and financially their assets are properly structured. The bottom line is that if the person receives Medicaid, then when they die, the state of North Carolina is going to want to seek reimbursement.
Sure.
And it's the home place being in the estate for purposes of lien recovery or reimbursement that we, the attorney, want to avoid.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not that Medicaid is taking the home while we are still living, but they're going to look to our estate for estate recovery and or for reimbursement when we die. And we lawyers do not want the home place to be an asset in the estate, so we structure it differently.
Yeah, that's important to remember too. For all the planning, you're going to get the care you need in the nursing home, but like you said, at the end, Uncle Sam's come, or the state's coming back for reimbursement on that. And there are ways in the law, the way it's written today, to protect your assets today, despite the look back. Correct, gentlemen?
Correct.
Very
yes.
good. And I think that's important topic that if you have questions, if you have an elderly family member or yourself is getting up there, today's probably the day to start thinking about that and call Harvell and Collins today, 252-726-9050, or you can go online to harvellandcollins.com. Gentlemen, thank you as always. We'll talk again next week when we do Let's Talk Legal.